Here they get it to number 15. Quick double team. Gugliotta and Kidd knocked away, and then he puts it in. Somehow Carter recovers, and he has 51 points.
8:02 on a Wednesday. Happy Wednesday, Vancouver. Halford Bruff, Sportsnet 650, your home of the Canucks, your home of the Vancouver Canucks. Halford and Bruff of the Morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. Hour three of the program is brought to you by Campbell & Pound Real Estate Appraisers. Trust the expertise of Campbell & Pound. You can do so by visiting them on the internet at campbell-pound.com today. I assume we don't have Murph on the line yet because it's not 8:05. We will be joined by Dan Murphy shortly. Friendly reminder, as we do a reset here on the Halford and Bruff Show, today on the station, you've got Canucks Talk with Drance and Dodd. You've got Canucks Central with Sat and Dan. That's going to lead you into tonight's Canucks game, which, of course, will be broadcast here on Sportsnet 650. Reminder, no TV for the next two Canucks exhibition games. So for those of you that are flipping around the tube tonight, either on your Shaw or Telus guides, trying to find the Canucks game, don't freak out. You're going to have to go to an alternate method of media consumption.
Okay? Well, the Canucks will be streaming it on their website.
That is one of them. You could also listen on our web app, our radio player. You can go on the good old-fashioned AM dial or 96.9 HD3. You still got a lot of options to consume. Or if you want to make the trek out to Abbotsford.
Go outside and get a life.
Or you can do that. Just smell the roses.
Go to the arena, put your ear against the wall.
Yeah, go out to Abbotsford.
Go out to Abbotsford.
Spend some money, you cheap, you know. Come on.
But it's so far away.
So the things that I'll be curious to watch for tonight is, obviously, if the Canucks put out their best possible lineup. Bruce Boudreau, via cameo, has said that the Canucks are really going to ramp it up in their preseason now. They've yet to win a game. No major concern about that. There were extenuating circumstances in some, you know, in one game the Canucks played well, should have won. Demko gets pulled after the second period, and Seelovs lets a couple of questionable goals go in. That game, they could have won in overtime, but they didn't. Other games, the Canucks had not a great lineup versus a pretty good lineup. Another thing I'll be curious about tonight is what kind of lineup the Oilers send. I originally thought that, well, they'll probably go with a bare-bones lineup too. You know, the Canucks sent one to Edmonton. Now Edmonton could send one back.
Return the favor?
But I don't know about that now because I thought I read something on social media where the Oilers are maybe in the area doing some team building. So maybe all the Oilers made this trip. Weren't they sturgeon fishing?
Yeah, Andy, do you have an update on this? I know you retweeted it on your timeline. Can you please give us an update on the good update from the Oilers team fishing outing?
Well, yeah, just originally it was a picture of Kane and Vertanen and Ulevi and one other guy. I'm sorry, I forget who. And
Ulevi?
Ulevi. Yeah, he was there for some reason, too. Yeah.
Ulevi works
just laying on the ground.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know.
Yeah, he's very tired. Anyways.
The sturgeon ate him.
Yeah. didn't take much effort either. Okay, I'll stop.
kind of swallowed him.
Oh, my God. Okay.
Focus. Let's focus.
Shiny object. So Vertanen was in the shot with Kane and others. And, Kane then cropped Vertanen out of his social media posts of those pictures, and then the Oilers' Twitter account did the same thing as well. So they've completely wiped the slate clean of Vertanen.
Kane's brand couldn't handle being in a photo.
I was going to say, there's a lot of jokes there, but we do need to move on because we're going to be joined now by our Canucks insider, Dan Murphy, a presentation of Freeway Mazda here on the Halford and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650. What up, Murph? How are you, bud?
What's going on, gentlemen? How's your morning so far?
It's been good. We've got an hour left. We're always happy to talk to you on a Wednesday. Do you have a sense, and I hate to throw you on the spot here, but you are kind of in the know, do you have a sense of what kind of lineup the Oilers are going to have tonight, or are you playing the guessing game like we are?
Well, I mean, right after the game, after the 7-2 win, they flew to Abbotsford, the whole team. So they were taken off slightly after the Canucks from the same airport, the same FBO. I saw them arriving before we took off. So I know everybody will be at the game tonight, and I was told by someone who should be in the know that there was a chance that McDavid would be playing this evening. And I don't know how many of their top guys are going to play. But, you know, I was told by someone that they felt that McDavid would be in the lineup. I kind of find that hard to believe because they do have one preseason game left. But I guess if they're all there, then maybe they can pick which one they want to play for the final two. And there's a chance to be played. So I think the lineup, no matter what, is going to be better than the one that Vancouver sent to Edmonton. I think there are going to be more regulars for the Oilers in the lineup in that sense. But it remains to be seen if indeed McDavid plays tonight. They will skate in Abbotsford this morning. I think 10:30 is their morning skate. Meanwhile, the Canucks will skate at UBC. So I think there's a good chance that the Oilers have some of their, you know, their A-listers on the ice. And if my source was on the mark, then McDavid might be in there too.
Well, that'd be cool for the people that get to watch out in Abbotsford. Murph, do you think the Canucks are going to go with their best lineup possible? I know Bruce Boudreau wants to get a win in this preseason. I'm sure he wants to see his group together, and they only have two games left.
Yeah, I would think so. I haven't seen the lines yet, but I would think that, you know, given which players are out with Besser, Mikheyev, Dermott, I think that he will construct the lines as if that's what he's going to go with in game number one. I would expect that to happen on Friday night as well. So, you know, I think that probably Miller and Pearson will be playing on the first line. I'm not sure who they'll be there with, maybe Garland, because that's kind of what happened when Besser got hurt. So, I think that he'll go with a lineup that we are very similar to what we're going to see on opening night. And, you know, preseason is preseason. You know, losing is one thing. You know, I don't know how many times I've asked guys in the preseason about the process versus results, but when the results are bad and the process seems bad, then you need to find something to build on. And I think that's kind of been the case for the Canucks. It's kind of sad to say that maybe their best effort was a 7-2 loss with almost none of their regulars, because it was a pretty good game until the last 4 minutes, to be honest, fairly competitive. So I think they need to find something, some sort of traction. I'm not saying that, you know, if they lose the next two, then that's the season's over. But I think you need to see them play, you know, maybe with a little more purpose, a little more speed, a little more cohesion, because certainly that's, we haven't seen that so far to this group.
When the Canucks are putting together their opening night roster, they're going to have to keep in, obviously, as part of the calculations, is going to be the salary cap. Mm-hmm. Of Besser, Mikheyev, and Dermott, if the Canucks need to put one of those guys on LTI, who do you think would be the most likely?
Well, I don't think it's going to be Besser. I kind of have a feeling that when they said 3 to 4 weeks, I was conservative. I would be shocked if he wasn't on this road trip to start the season. I would be shocked if he didn't play on this road trip this season, to start the season. I don't know which game that would be, but I just don't think that he's going to be gone for 10 and 24, because I think that's still the rule, right? 10 games and 24 days.
Yeah.
You know, I haven't heard anything more about Dermott. I mean, when they say he's feeling woozy, I mean, to me, that kind of says head injury. So who knows where he's at? And same goes with Mikheyev. But I was a little surprised that Mikheyev traveled with the team to Seattle the day that they lost 4-0. What was that, last Saturday night? So, you know, the other option, too, is if they want to get cap compliant, plus, you know, get as close to the cap in order to utilize the LTI, you know, maybe, you know, they can waive one of or both Dickinson or Pullman. Mm-hmm. To do that. And, you know, I'm not sure one of those guys would get picked up at this point. So that could be another avenue. Do that to start the season and then recall them for game number two in Philly. So, I mean, there's a number of ways. I mean, I'm kind of somewhere between Shorthouse and Drance when it comes to this stuff. I'm not totally clueless, but I'm not, you know, up to speed like Thomas is. So I'm sure he could talk much more to it. But I think there's other avenues to go, as in waiving a couple of players like that to do it as well, you know, assuming that you feel like they wouldn't get plucked.
How do the Canucks feel the Quinn Hughes to the right side move has worked?
I think they feel it's worked actually just fine, and perhaps maybe better than they expected in terms of how quickly he adapted to it. And maybe we shouldn't be shocked. I mean, he said he played on the right side a lot growing up, a little bit in college. So it's not totally for him to him. But now you have to figure out the best balance. I mean, what serves your team the best? I think, you know, Pullman's health might dictate this a bit. I mean, now that it seems like he's healthy and there hasn't been setbacks, I think that probably would add to the theory that maybe Quinn moves back to the left side. But I mean, certainly it's an option. If they're down a goal, I mean, he should be out there on the ice all the time, but if they're down a goal late, then he can play the right side and play with OEL. So maybe just having this happen in the preseason, they know that situationally it can work. And I think that's a big bonus for them. I'm not sure that they'll start the season with them on the right side, but I guarantee we will see them on the right side at some point throughout, you know, maybe even the first game.
Well, I wonder how much Dermott's health issue plays into this as well, because if Hughes and OEL were together, one of the pairs, the second pair that I thought was possible would be Dermott and Myers. But if Dermott isn't available, then who would you play with Myers on that second pair, right? That becomes tougher, because then you're, you know, like, is it going to be, you know, Rathbone? Probably not in the top four. Shen, Burrows, those are right side guys. And then the last option, I guess, would be Christian Wallanen, but I don't know if they want Wallanen going from, like, he signed a two-way contract to he's now a top four defenseman. So I wonder if you might be right, and it might start with Hughes and, I don't know, Pullman, and then you put OEL and Myers back together for the second pair.
Yeah, and you might even have Hughes and Shen. I mean, it's I mean, I think people realize you know, Luke's limitations, and probably you're not playing him more than 12 to 15 minutes a night, but it has been a pair that has worked. It's been comfortable for Quinn. So that is a definite possibility as well. You know, I think most of the time we saw that, you know, Pullman, when he plays at the right amount of minutes and when he's not moved up the lineup, he can be somewhat effective. It's when you move him out of a depth where he gets into trouble. So I think at this point with Dermott's situation unknown, it's going to be more about balance than trying to really load up that top line with OEL and Quinn Hughes.
We're speaking to Sportsnet's Dan Murphy here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Murph, of course, is a presentation of Freeway Mazda. What else are we looking for tonight, Murph? Obviously, the game's not going to be televised, so folks aren't going to get a chance to see the Canucks icing, and let's be honest, a far superior lineup in terms of NHL talent tonight at Abbotsford. Definitely a cool thing for Abbotsford that they're going to get this game and possibly get McDavid, but you've only got a handful of games left before the real thing begins. I know I've seen the stat that in the years where the Canucks have traditionally done really well in the regular season and playoffs, the preseason hasn't been good, and quite frankly, it hasn't mattered. So there's always that to fall back on. But I would think that they want to see some semblance of a better, full, complete 60-minute effort compared to what they've seen throughout the early stages of the preseason.
Yeah, no question. I've seen those numbers too. Like, Shorty tried to get me to talk about those in a broadcast because he didn't want to talk about them himself because he wanted me to be made fun of, right? He wanted me to get called out. I was like, no, I'm not doing that. Give that to Cheech. Maybe he'll talk about it. I'm
just
not
give it to
that.
Halford. He'll do it.
Yeah, he'll do it. You know, what I think they need to see is them play with a little more speed. You know, and, you know, we know it's not a fast team. We know with Mikheyev out that, you know, limits of, you know, one, you know, major person that brings speed. But I just think in that Seattle game, the puck retrieval, the movement from defensemen to forwards, whatever they always call it, the five-man unit together, it wasn't there. They were crushed by the forecheck. They didn't move the puck quickly. They were beaten in the neutral zone. So I think they have to play with a little more speed. I just want to see a little more cohesion. You know, this is a team that, you know, last year, as we know, you know, finished very strong from whatever game 25 on. They were very good. So I want to see something that more resembles that. I don't, you know, the playing hard to play against, whatever. Yes, of course you want to see that.
Of course.
But if I don't want to, I want to see them play a little more speed, a little more pace. I want to see them, you know, dictate a little bit, because I don't think we've seen that with the exception of a few, you know, stretches in these games so far.
Is the transitioning from of the puck, has that been a focus in practices that you've attended or training camp? Sometimes NHL practices all look the same, like they kind of do the same drills, and there's always a breakout drill, sometimes against pressure, sometimes not against pressure. But I'm just wondering if you could sense maybe more of that in the practices that you've witnessed.
Well, I mean, first off, for me to answer this question, I'd have to pay attention when I'm at practice.
True. Yeah. No, that's very important.
And many times I'm just nattering with people or talking with people, so I really couldn't tell you all the drills that they've been running. But I'm guessing that the way that Bruce Boudreau looked and sounded after the Seattle game, he wasn't nearly as exasperated after Edmonton. For sure, that's going to be a focus for this team. You know, even Luke Shen said after the game in Seattle that the defense is just they weren't physical enough. They were stick checking. They weren't engaged. And for these final two games, if they're not engaged, I think that would be a major red flag going into the regular season.
What are you doing for the game tonight? Are you going? I know you're an Abbotsford guy. Proud.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I have to go out there and collect post game sound anyway. But I will be going out. I'm from Abbotsford, as you know. So it is the 10th anniversary of one of my very best friends passing of cancer. So a bunch of my buddies are getting a suite at the game. His name was Jamie Buchanan. Good dude. He would have been 50 yesterday, I think. So my buddies are getting a suite and they're going to celebrate Jim. So I'll see them and then I'll get post game coverage and come on home in preparation for tomorrow's practice at UBC.
Beautiful. Well, a sad occasion, but it's cool that you get to hang out with your buddies tonight and all that. So that'll be great. Thanks for doing this, Murph. We really appreciate it. Enjoy tonight. We'll do this again next Wednesday.
From Edmonton on the day of the regular season opener.
Looking forward to it. Thanks, bud.
Bye, boys. Take care. Yep.
That's Dan Murphy on Sportsnet 650, brought to you by Freeway Mazda, Canada's number one consumer-rated Mazda dealer. Do you want to do some What We Learns?
Yeah, there's a story that we really should have done as soon as this broke.
Yeah.
And really, this is perfect for the Halford and Brough show. Mm-hmm. So here's the way I'm going to start it, because it's a What We Learned.
Okay.
I learned that in certain fishing derbies,
okay,
you need to take a polygraph test in order to, if you've won it, you need to take a polygraph test in order to actually claim the prize. Because another thing I learned, there's cheating in fishing derbies.
The competitive fishing circuit? There's a scandal? Actually, I'm faking ignorance here. I did kind of get up to speed. Although, admittedly, I didn't exactly know what was going on. So it's called the Lake Erie Walleye Trail. It is a fishing competition in Ohio. And this has gone viral because of the video, mm-hmm, right? There's allegations that a guy was waiting, W-E-I-G-H-T-I-N-G, waiting down his fish.
They aren't just allegations. He was doing it.
Right. Okay. So we can't play the entire video because there are too many expletives.
Oh, no. We got a version of it.
But we've got something that we can play, and I haven't heard it yet.
Do we want to play the...
No. Play the original one first, and then we might add something to it. So this is the original one, and this is when... So the winners have been announced.
Yes.
But there is a bit of a people are questioning whether or not these fish that are getting weighed in, that's really the weight, because one of the guys involved failed a polygraph test in a previous competition. So there were people like, I don't trust this guy. And now this guy is saying this fish weighs quite a lot, and it doesn't look like a fish that weighs quite a lot. So what's going on here? This is, I believe, the tournament director is cutting open the fish,
the winning catch,
to see what's going on.
We got weights and fish. Get the f- out of here. Get the f- out of here.
This is the fishing world's version of a smoking gun. Like, when they caught him.
When he said, yelled, "We got weights and fish!"
Like he said there's a bomb in the building or something. He
honestly
completely lost it.
I honestly thought, I was like, those guys better get out of there.
We got weights and fish!
So I was actually thinking...
We need that as a drop.
And I don't want to stereotype these fishing competitions,
That's
but...
Okay.
But what if we were to add a little music to it, and you imagine the guys getting out of there as soon as they were found out.
We got weights and fish! Get the f*** out of here! Get the f*** out of here!
Like, that absolutely works, does it not?
Things didn't get crazy until he turned on that chase music.
There's a bunch of angry fishermen shaking their fists in the background. Shake harder, boy!
I feel like you need the Dukes of Hazzard voice in there. It looks like the Duke boys got themselves in trouble again. And then, I don't know, they're jumping over a river or something from some bridge that used to be there.
We got weights and fish!
We got weights and fish!
I just want to use that.
Sounds like, I'm a man. I'm 40. We got weights and fish.
I want to use that at the most inopportune moments where it makes no sense whatsoever. Right, I want that to be a catchphrase on the Halford and Bruff show. So,
can we just play? I want to play the
banjo.
There's no instrument out there that suggests there's gonna be a chase more than the banjo.
We got weights and fish. Get the f- out of here. Get the f- out of here.
It's the ultimate tomfoolery instrument. There's going to be some tomfoolery. You'll be playing that banjo.
I wish, now that I'm thinking about it in real time, I wish we had the Benny Hill music so we could also try the yakety sax.
No,
at the end of
I think
it
the
well.
Banjo's perfect. Don't try and top it.
Not
we had perfection
to.
There.
Not, well, we can't. Like, I can't throw him on the spot and be like, no, do
I'm
enough.
A man. I'm 40. We got weights and fish.
See, it works.
we need a compilation of rednecks yelling stuff. That's what we need.
Rednecks yelling stuff. That's a segment. Yeah. Not time for rednecks yelling stuff. We got it up for you.
Can we just talk about the gall?
We got weights and fish.
Okay. Can we just talk about the gall of putting these weights in a fish?
It wasn't
not
just weights.
Long,
it
not
was, yeah, prepared fish fillets.
Yeah, there was
too.
Actual fish fillets from other fish.
Fillets, right. If you will.
Oh, sorry,
yeah.
Fillets.
I don't even know.
But yeah. Not long after failing a polygraph, so everyone's like, and it was kind of like he turned these 5-pound fish into 8-pound fish, and they're like, wow, that must be a muscly fish, right? That must be all muscle, you know? Like,
that fish was doing protein shakes for weeks in advance.
That fish was trying to lose weight, and then it started working out. It's like, actually, I've gained weight. Right? Like, that's what they were hoping the people would believe. And these are like experienced
anglers,
right?
Didn't
that are just like,
the bowling
that's,
ball in
that's,
there.
I can see that fish. Apparently, when they were calling out the weights of the fish publicly, someone in the background was going like, yeah, right. Yeah. Someone, you know, like they didn't believe.
Why does that fish weigh as much
like,
as
yeah,
him?
Like, cut that fish open. And then the banjo started to play. There was actually a guy with a banjo
yeah,
there
on
he's
site.
Like waiting for his cue.
Come on, do it.
He goes to every fishing competition just waiting for a fight to break out.
Yeah, we got Wasting Fish guy pointing at the banjo when it starts.
Two things. Oh, okay. One, I think you said the gall of these guys. The reason that they had that gall was because the prize was $39,000.
Yeah.
Like, it's no small fish.
Well, and the weights were expensive too, right?
So those also cost money.
And the fillets.
Two, just to give you how high the stakes were on this, I don't know if we picked it up in the clip, but I did watch one version of the clip where someone in the crowd actually yells, and I quote, "Someone call the cops!" Like, can you imagine calling the cops and be like, "We are dealing with homicides and organized crime." Also, someone put weights in a fish at a competition.
Did you read the whole story? Because the police were called, and the reason the police were called, and it wasn't to arrest these guys for like theft. It was because the other participants in the competition were going to kill them.
They were
going to
do some killing?
Also, yeah, the guy that's...
Cut them open now!
The demonstrative guy who's yelling in his face at the beginning of the clip is a police officer.
Can we hear it one more time?
With the banjo.
With the banjo?
With you the want banjo. The banjo. We'll go out, send your What We Learns into the Dunbar Lumber text line. We'll do them on the other side.
We got weights and fish! Get the f*** out of here! Get the f*** out of here!
The winning is really part of the development. Teaching them how to play winning basketball is like at the top of our list in developing players, right? So we always tried to do that when we were at the D-League team. And those guys, you know, they usually took a lot of our guys because we had a winning program.
8:32 on a Wednesday. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Halford, Bruff, Sportsnet 650. Vancouver's very own. Your home of the Vancouver Canucks. Halford and Bruff in the Morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. We are also brought to you by Campbell and Pound Real Estate Appraisers. Trust the expertise of Campbell and Pound. You can do so by visiting them on the internet at campbell-pound.com today. You're gazing
at me. I think that was Nick Nurse talking about the Canucks, how the Canucks need to play winning basketball.
They need to have a mindset,
yeah.
And we will replace G League team with AHL team because they're going to Abbotsford tonight.
Yeah,
the parallels are phenomenal. I actually want to do a real quick what we learned. I know, it's the humanoid's turn, but yesterday we had NHL Deputy Commissioner Bill Daly on the show, right? And I asked Bill, we're on a first name basis. I asked Bill, have you guys, you and Gary Bettman, I call him Gary.
Yeah.
Have you guys gone to Mullet Arena in Arizona yet? Because I don't know if you're aware of this or not, Bill, but it's kind of a story. Like, they're going to be playing in I know they say it's 5,000 seat stadium, but it's probably going to have less than that. Also, you know, there's a little bit of a pushback that maybe this isn't an NHL caliber facility beyond what the fan experience is, right? Like, this might be going to play a game at 8 rinks now, Scotiabarn. I understand. Now, I have not actually heard this clip yet, but I understand that yesterday, and this has been the return week for Kipper and Bourne on Fan 590 in Toronto, Nick Kiprios and Justin Bourne. Kipper said that the complaints already from a lot of Coyotes players about how bad the situation is, facility-wise, training-wise, everything, is already starting to raise the ire of players. Let's let Kipper take it away now. This is the situation in Arizona as players get familiar with their new surroundings at Mullet Arena.
There are some real rumblings about the boys not being very happy down there.
Oh, you think? But
like really upsetting.
So surprisingly worse than they expected, or just being a part of the sideshow?
I think even worse.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's embarrassing. It's embarrassing.
Maybe we'll make a few phone calls and get the skinny on that.
So to give you an idea of how bad this must be, there are many guys on the Arizona Coyotes that should be thankful that they're playing in the NHL. I think there's some guys that was the last stop saloon, right? Arizona this year is going to lead the league in, I forgot that guy still played. For example, I forgot that Zach Cassian is now an Arizona Coyote.
I forgot that too.
Nick Bjugstad is apparently an Arizona Coyote.
Is Andrew Ladd still playing?
He is a fourth line winger on the Arizona
Coyotes. So he's actually still playing. Okay.
I forgot Troy Stetcher is now an Arizona Coyote.
I didn't forget that. I knew he'd gone to Arizona, and I kind of wondered why he chose Arizona, but I guess it's an opportunity to play.
Can you name
right?
their goalies, both of them?
Karel Vejmelka, which I believe is Vemelka, not Vejmelka. Ivan Prosetsov.
He's in there. It might be John Gillies.
John Gillies is there.
He's there.
It's the Last Chance Saloon.
Might be Jonas Johansson.
Right.
Of Buffalo and Colorado fame. Really that good.
I think noted Simpsons character Jack McBain plays there. Anyway,
Jacob Chikrin, hoping not to be playing there.
He's probably one of the guys that, like, this sucks down here.
What
he's
about Clayton Keller? Like, what happened to him?
He's
still
there.
He got paid. They gave him a big contract.
I'm sure that they're going to unload him next.
Well, can they?
Yeah, probably.
I honestly don't even know how good he's been.
It's hard to tell because that there's so many guys where they go there.
Nick Schmaltz still there?
He is, the Schmaltzian one.
Okay.
Now, here's the thing. The idea of the Last Chance Saloon, that whole thing, is like you're just happy to be there. Like, all the other saloons won't take you. You've been annexed and removed from every other bar. So you finally found one that'll take you. So you don't complain that the toilets don't work or that your glass is dirty. Any of that, right? So it gives you an idea of how bad it must be that a lot of these guys are like, we should just be happy that we're here.
Did Kipper get into any of the reasons why they're not happy?
He said he's going to chase it down throughout the week.
Like, I wonder if it's the facilities that they have. Because I know
I'm sure that they're probably changing.
Well, I wonder if some of them are even not even built yet, right?
Do you have to change at home and then drive to the rink? Like, is that a possibility?
For the Canucks when they practiced for a while.
Do you share when you get to Mullet Arena? Are you sharing the change room?
I thought
they were
putting millions of dollars into those types of facilities. Like,
I just don't think they have the size, though.
Yeah.
Like, an NHL dressing room needs to be huge, and even then, it's cramped. We've been in them after game, and it's like this. It smells bad, and guys are trying to get changed. There's
95
people.
Look at the MLB minor league standards now. 1,100 square feet for the visitors' clubhouse.
So you brought this up with the Nat. What's going on with the Nat?
They're losing the barbecue area because they have to...
What?
To continue being an MLB affiliate, they have to follow these rules.
Right.
And one of them is the expanded clubhouse that's now going to take up almost the entire barbecue area.
I mean, do you get changed alongside, like, co-eds and students that are also, like, using the shower facilities, right? They're like, we just had an intramural floorball game.
Now it's like the sign says, up tonight, bingo, afterwards, Arizona County's game.
There was an old rink in Hamilton like that where there was one shower room. For the entirety of the arena.
Right.
Right.
And it was at the end of the hallway, and it was an old, old rink.
Was it also a prison?
It felt like one. It honestly felt like one.
They're like, this is worse than Calgary. I can't believe this.
It no longer exists.
Anyway, moo cow me. We should move on to the humanoids. I just wanted to get that out there. I had a laugh. Okay, what we learned is humanoids.
What we learned from Tony in Poco, I learned that you can actually put weights in a fish. Yeah, it didn't look that complicated.
We got weights in fish!
I don't know.
Just open the mouth and shove them down
there. Shove them down there,
I suppose maybe you learned that this was possible. When you think about the logistics, it's not that difficult. Apparently, these
Look like fishing weights, right? They were in the store, and probably one of the guys went, "What if, guys? What if?"
Yeah, not one of them fishing weights.
Cletus, hear me out here.
They were in Ohio, guys. They weren't in like the deepest parts of Arkansas.
Can we pretend?
No, I'm sure these guys probably travel the circuit, right? That's them in their car.
Time to get the fish up together to Ohio. Put some weights in some fish.
Driving from town to town with your cousin.
Apparently those guys were pulling in way more than we're pulling in, right?
Yeah. Those guys were making way more money.
Those guys had jet ski money.
Yeah.
Only we could cheat and make money in radio.
There was a jet ski on the back of his jet ski. He put two of them together.
Okay. Kevin on the road, what we learned. I had to pull over during the weights and fish part because I couldn't stop laughing. Keep making radio gold, gents. Yeah, that one just worked.
Yep.
The banjo after the big, because you can imagine the scene. It was like, I mean, it was probably like going back to, what was that show with the movie with Burt Reynolds in it?
Deliverance?
No, not Deliverance. Well, he was in Deliverance. Yeah. No,
Smokey and the Bandit?
Smokey and the Bandit, yeah. Like, that was good. That was a good banjo show.
Banjo makes anything better.
I believe the movie.
If you want someone to work hard, just play a banjo over it and things will get going.
I think the movie you're thinking of was Boogie Nights. Didn't have as many banjos in it.
No, it did not.
No.
Have you seen Deliverance?
Yes.
Are you sure? Or are you just lying?
Yeah, why would I lie
about it? Got the squinty eye kid playing the banjo. Again, banjo reference.
And that scene, I've seen Deliverance.
So I've seen The Simpsons parody of it.
John Voight, too, right?
It's a family-friendly movie.
It is.
All ages. Was there a time in movies in the 70s where all they made was like super dark, depressing movies?
And
like Deliverance,
get...
Deer Hunter. Have you ever seen the Deer Hunter? Yep. If you're ever having a good day and you're like, you know what? I'd love to be depressed.
The 70s were dark for movies, and you know what changed it? And Halford's going to back me up because he's a big fan, is Star Wars. This is true. This is a fact. It's a movie trivia fact. The movie landscape completely shifted when Star Wars came out and became very positive, lighthearted, family-friendly.
You know,
it was all dark and dreary.
You know what another one was? And I've heard an interview with Sylvester Stallone on this because he wrote the Rocky screenplay because he felt that movies were getting too weird and there wasn't like enough of these just kind of standard hero type movies. He was also like, I also felt that I could play Rocky.
Yeah.
So that
They paid him money to try and go away and not cast him in that movie, and he was like, no, I'm doing it. And they finally relented and like, fine, you're gonna do this movie.
Who did they want? Ned Beatty?
They
wanted him in the role. He's like, you're gonna have to get into shape.
I was gonna go somewhere with this because I actually had movie knowledge to add to this conversation.
Really? You?
It passed me. Oh, I remember now.
I love the Money Pit.
I like it. It's about Cool Runnings again. Damn it.
Well, it's a great movie. No. And I'm not being facetious. It is.
The Deer Hunter. So the wedding scene in The Deer Hunter is fairly iconic because it's probably one of the most realistic depictions of I think it was a Polish wedding, if I'm not mistaken.
Pennsylvania town, yeah.
We were in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania town, and the hotel we were staying at was this old, ornate, the Omni William Penn, and it had like brass and oak everywhere, and it had this really old school bar that, and they had the old suspenders, skinny tie, shirt wearing bartender. Like, it was very classic sort of Midwestern America. They had a wedding in the next room, and I think it was the same thing, like a Polish wedding, and it was all like older, overweight, former steel mill guys that were wearing suspenders that were holding up their pants, that were holding up their bellies, and they were all wasted. I'm like, this is literally...
we're in the deer hunter.
We're
right
in the deer hunter. Like, God.
You guys going to Vietnam tomorrow?
Yeah, guaranteed, like, these guys put weight in fish.
Yeah, they did, right? But also, I was like, I know how the movie ended. I'm like, we got to remove all pistols from this scene because this is going to end badly. But so it was like the most accurate representation of real life because it was dark and grimy, and I think they used a lot of real... actors from like small town Pennsylvania in the movie. Anyway, I digress.
Marcus and Gibson's what we learned. I learned Hockey Canada went on the offensive yesterday and was blaming the media and false accusations for all their negative publicity. Yeah, it's, we talked about this earlier in the show with David Amber, and I kind of said, listen, I'm trying to put myself in the shoes of the Hockey Canada executive and the board of directors. And I get they're probably reading some things from people that are maybe like politicians. We all know that politicians, when they smell blood in the water, they're going to use it. And media can do that too, right? You know, Hockey Canada is an easy target right now, and they probably feel persecuted beyond reason. But what they need to also realize is Hockey Canada –
his microphone is...
Hockey Canada right now, people just don't believe in it. They don't have any trust in this organization. And by holding on and refusing to resign and by arguing their points, which people don't really want to argue, all they're doing is hurting the organization further. And if they really cared about the organization and the future of their organization, they would resign. And they would let someone else take over and stop acting like they're the only ones that can salvage Hockey Canada. They're not. Right now, they're the only ones that can hurt Hockey Canada, and that's what they're doing.
I'm loath to do this because the Dunbar Lumber text message in basket has been spicy already this morning. We've had a lot of angst and anger thrown towards us.
Already one angry fisherman.
Yeah, including one guy who's now accusing us of saying that all fishermen are rednecks. Congratulations on making that logical leap. Rednecks are rednecks. And judging by your text, no, you know what? I'm not even going to go there. But I'm loath to do this because anytime we say the words Justin and Trudeau, it's just a cascade of stuff that, quite frankly, I don't have the time or energy to deal with. But Laddie has said that we have some JT audio as it pertains to the Hockey Canada situation. This is hot audio, fresh off the presses. So Jason just talked about the Hockey Canada situation. We will turn the audio over now to Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau on the Hockey Canada scandal.
First of all, I think it boggles the mind that Hockey Canada is continuing to dig in its heels. Parents across the country are losing faith or have lost faith in Hockey Canada. Certainly, politicians here in Ottawa have lost faith in Hockey Canada. It's no surprise that provincial organizations are questioning whether or not they want to continue supporting an organization that doesn't understand how serious a situation it has contributed to causing. I really hope they understand, because hockey is a really important sport to a lot of Canadians and a lot of kids. And right now, this mess is doing no favors to kids across the country.
So yesterday it was one of the interim title holders at Hockey Canada, Andrea Skinner, who's Jeff Skinner's sister. I did not realize that.
Oh, I didn't know aftermath. That. Board of directors.
Yes, thank you. She had it was a really tough look for her yesterday. Like, I don't think she could have done a worse job, both in terms of preparation, where she was clearly flummoxed on answering pretty simple questions, and also being remarkably defensive. I was watching a couple of the stand-ups of the analysis afterwards, and everyone said that there was a kind of an understanding mutually that they were going to go into these hearings, and it was not going to be, I wouldn't say cordial or friendly, but there was going to be a more free-flowing exchange of, we have questions, you're going to need to provide answers, not you're going to stonewall what seemed like pretty straightforward questions.
Well, it sounds like they've been hiring PR crisis firms too, right, that are trying to craft the message and all that sort of thing. And in reality, the tables are not going to turn for them. They aren't. In fact, it's interesting to note that like politicians of all types are against Hockey Canada. This is not one of those things where one party is supporting Hockey Canada and the other isn't, so people are going to fall in line based on their political tribalism. Everyone is saying right now that there needs to be change at Hockey Canada, and this thing has really just gone on long enough. For all the time they've been spending fighting the resignation and fighting the changes at the top, they could have been planning a succession plan. Mm-hmm. They could have been interviewing candidates to try and help right the ship, as opposed to, is there some hysteria going on? Is there media hysteria? Yeah, probably a little bit. Is there some, maybe even some misinformation or people not getting their facts straight on certain stuff? Did even Hockey Canada have some good intentions with the way they handled some of this stuff? Yeah, maybe you can give that. Are politicians grandstanding? Yeah, that's what politicians do, right? Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, Canadians have lost trust in Hockey Canada. So it is incumbent on the people in charge of Hockey Canada to realize they're not going to turn this thing around. So resign, make changes, and hand it over to someone else to solve the situation. You guys are not the only ones that can solve the situation. You're not that special. In fact, you're not doing a very good job.
Only like four texts.
I'm surprised.
Yeah.
It's been rather gentle.
That's not bad. So good job, everyone, for showing the restraint on a sports talk radio show, which is supposed to be fun. I stress the word supposed to. Someone's got a case of the supposedes. Okay, let's get to some other what we learns here from the people. Here's one from Chayton in Surrey, hashtag WWO, what we learned. Trading Horvat for a D-man. We're back into the Canucks talk, by the way. Trading Horvat for a defenseman would make sense if the organization had a capable 3C replacement or a prospect ready to fill the role. Lazar is solid on the fourth line, who I'm sure could play 3C, but I wouldn't want him there for the full season. This is the old robbing Peter to pay Paul, or, you know, from a position of strength, but then turning it into maybe a position of weakness argument. Horvat's going to net you the best return outside of all of the forwards. A forward is your strength as a group, where you've got depth and you've got excess guys that you can move. If that's the group, Horvat is the quote-unquote asset of that group that's going to fetch you the best return.
Yeah,
it's plain and simple, right? Because you're not going to trade Pettersson, you're not going to trade Miller, and then go down the list, it's Horvat. At the same time, you do weaken your team fairly significantly down the middle. Because as Chayton points out, there's no ready-made replacement for that spot. And you and I have covered enough good teams.
Mm-hmm.
Good teams have really good 3Cs and really good third lines. Pittsburgh's the one we always bring up.
But they don't always spend big money on the 3C.
Ideally,
they
no.
They find one somehow.
Right, but that's part of the game.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and if you don't have one, you don't find one, you're kind of left to masquerade.
But in Pittsburgh...
Yep.
They got Nick Bonino.
It was more about the guys they flanked.
Just hold on a second. No, it wasn't.
Yes, it wasn't. Yes, it was.
They get Nick Bonino from the Canucks in the Brandon Sutter trade. And for them, Bonino was an absolute bargain, right? Mm-hmm. So Bonino was the center on the, what was it called? The
HBK line.
HBK line.
Kessel and Hagelin and Bonino.
Now, as soon as Bonino became not a bargain, because he became an unrestricted free agent, they said, we can't afford you anymore.
Yeah, he signed in Nashville and became an overpriced 3C.
No. He was a 2C there. And he wasn't capable of handling the 2C duties, really.
Yeah.
And that was the same in Vancouver. He was a 2C in Vancouver, and he wasn't good enough to be a 2C.
The big difference was...
He was a perfect fit in Pittsburgh for two reasons. Number one, capable of playing 3C in an offensive role,
mm-hmm.
almost a sheltered role, because... the opposition would focus their defensiveness on the Crosby line and the Malkin line. And he was also a perfect fit because he was cheap,
mm-hmm.
right? That's the type of trade that good GMs pull off. It's also the type of trade that, frankly, that you can do when you have really good players like Crosby and Malkin.
Someone just texted in, remember when the Oilers traded Taylor Hall for a defenseman? Why are we trading Horvat? One, there's no we. We didn't do anything, Jason and I. Collectively, there's no we. We're just talking about it. We just talk about things. Two, you bring up a good point. Taylor Hall from Adam Larson is a great classic textbook example of don't go chasing something because you feel you need to do something right now.
Yeah.
Taylor Hall for Adam Larson was a fail in a lot of different reasons, but one of them was Peter Chiarelli decided we need to get a top four defenseman right now.
It's because they were so desperate.
Yes.
They had been wandering the desert for years, basically since Chris Pronger left, in order to fix their blue line. It's kind of felt like that in Vancouver. It's been a long time since we've been talking about these blue line issues. And they just felt that was their only option. And the Canucks might get to that point eventually too, right? Let's say they start the season and they're like, we're a pretty good team, but our blue line isn't very good. Mm-hmm. And our blue line is keeping us back. Well, what are their options? Like, you get to the point where you're like, well, if we draft a guy, that's going to take a few years for it to happen. Mm-hmm. If we sign a guy in free agency, well, look at the list of unrestricted free agents. Like, everyone's overpaying in free agency. So what are our options here? It might have to be a trade. In fact, that's not even me saying that. Like, Rutherford has come out and said, like, yeah, probably the most likely scenario to fix the blue line is through trades. Mm-hmm. And this is why it always comes back to, make sure you draft enough defensemen. And make sure that you develop these defensemen, because you need to draft the positions that are premium assets and there is scarcity of. And for the most part, that's centers and defensemen. Now, I understand the whole best player available angle, and I agree with it to a certain extent. I think as you sometimes get into later rounds, that you do have to look positionally and be like, hey, do we have enough defensemen in the system? There was a couple of years ago where the Canucks didn't draft a single defenseman. They had like 9 picks, and they didn't draft a single defenseman. Now they're in this position, not just because of that, but partly because of that.
We're up against it for time, but I do want to get to one more humanoid, what we learned here on the Halford and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650. From Josh, the Zamboni guy. God, I got to hurry. Baseball playoffs loves weird starts times, so early on, that means that Jays and Mariners is going to all be 11 a.m. start times, right? This is already a complaint, is it not?
Hasn't been confirmed yet.
Jays, it's not. We know Friday, Saturday, Sunday. We don't know the times. It's really hard to talk over this music.
This is our new outro music, by the way.
I saw that there's a large cross-section of Jays Twitter that is always complaining about the start times that MLB gives them in these primetime games. Is that a thing, Laddie?
Yeah, usually you get the earlier game.
Right.
Yeah.
And there's a concern that might not be the case here. There's a concern now with really early Eastern start times that Mariners fans are going to have to watch games at like 9 o'clock in the morning. So we'll see what happens. Again, we know that it's Jays and Mariners Friday, Saturday, Sunday. What we don't know is what time these games are going to start. We do know that the Canucks game will be on at 7 o'clock tonight from Abbotsford. Hear it all right here. All your pregame, all your postgame, and of course, the game itself. This is so distracting. Signing off for now. I got to go. I have been Mike Halford. He has been Jason Bruff. He's been A-Dog, and he's been Laddie. This has been the Halford and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650.